Well, good morning and welcome to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
I'm awake.
And welcome back after a week or two of moving and such, your co-host, Hunter.
Good morning. This is my first morning podcast, and this is awkward. Well, I mean, I was up till like 2 a.m. last night, right? I was putting together this like Lego Star Destroyer that we've had for like months, but like we haven't had any place to build it, and we're like, well, we'll just wait till we'll move, and then you know we'll have some space to build it. So like I dug it out at like 10 o'clock last night, and I was like, yes, let's do this. And then you know 4 hours later, I'm like, shit, I should go to bed. So this is awesome.
No, it's great. The reason we're up early in the morning, 6 a.m. Pacific time, my time, 9 a.m. their time, is because our guest this week is joining us from Hamburg, Germany. Say hello to the CEO of Rockfish Games, Michael Schade. Did I say it right?
Absolutely correct. Good morning, yes! San Francisco and the rest of the world.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. We're here to talk about Everspace, but before that, I want to. You did a game before this that I really liked. We're going to talk about that. Galaxy on Fire 2
That is true.
And so you guys, it's mostly the same people, right? Doing this one.
It's pretty much the same team. We have been working together for about 10 years now on space games.
Right. So I got to get this off my chest. I have a beef with you guys. Okay. Oh. I loved Galaxy on Fire 2. It was the best freelancer type game since Freelancer. I'm just throwing that out because I really dug it. So when I finished it, I finished the campaign. And I kept playing a while, and I was like, is there more to this? And I found out, oh, look, there are expansions. Wait a minute. They're mobile only.
Yeah, I'm not on PC. I know.
I just want to ask why. Why did they never come to the PC? Because I wanted more. I wanted more because guys, if you guys haven't played Galaxy on Fire 2 HD on the PC, it is really a lot of fun. It's on Steam right now for $20. Goes on sale often too. It's on bundles. It goes on sale quite a bit. So get that game. But now that I've said that, why didn't the expansions ever come out for the PC? I just wanted to get that out there. Why?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, I know a lot of people are actually hating us for that, and we can fully understand.
I don't hate. I was. Just, I'm just sad. I don't. I'm not hating. I'm just sad. So I just wanted to. I'm just wondering why.
No, the reason is back then at Fish Labs. Obviously, we were a mobile studio, and the whole market turned to free to play. And we had investors breathing down our neck, move from premium to free to play. So, and then they said, well, we don't make much money with a PC version. And so don't spend time, don't spend money on this. We really need to get free to play nailed. And actually, they said, you won't get any money from us if you don't do free to play.
Oh, my God.
Yes, and so back then we had the team that's currently working at Rockfish. We started with doing premium games. We wanted to bring console game experience to the mobile devices, and I think we did that to a certain extent. And a lot of people loved what we did. Yeah. And then the market changed, and I mean, to a certain degree, the investors were right because the market did change towards free to play on mobile, and there was hardly a way to make enough money with premium games on mobile anymore. So it's like, well, what do you do? And so we built a second team. We hired guys who did free-to-play on browser games here in Hamburg. So there are a lot of studios very successful in doing free-to-play on browser. And so we tried to do free-to-play. So this is why pretty much everything that was premium back in the days was put on hold.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is also an explanation why we have a new studio now, because we, like the core, is excited about paid games. So pay once, play forever.
Yes.
That's it. And
if we have
more content, I think that's fair to ask for money, but not for the game itself continuously. Like we won't nickel and dime anybody. It's the classic style, and that's how we like it, and we think that's how our fans like it.
So you're not making this for free? Because I want the game for free, and I want it so free that you'll play it for me. You'll just come to my house and play the game for me, and I can
just make everything a quick time event where you tell me which button to push.
But I can hit any
button. It's interesting. I think you can see it's kind of the dichotomy of the kind of audience that wants everything free and there's still an audience that doesn't mind. Like, you see this with the new Elite Dangerous expansion. Like, you have all these people, and they're like, why do I have to pay for this shit? And then you have people like me, they're like, back in the day, you'd buy a game at $60, and then like 6 months later, an expansion came out for $30, and you didn't mind that so much.
Yeah.
So I don't mind that now.
Good, good. We hope you're not alone.
No, I don't think I am. There are other people who are like, you know what, this takes money. It takes money to make this shit, people, so I don't mind, you know, I don't mind paying for that, you know?
Let's talk about the elephant in the room real quick, though, about this game.
This game?
Because I'm looking at, yes, because I am looking at the Kickstarter page for this game, and there's a bunch of GIFs on it that are amazing. Uh-huh. And there's a section called Eye and Ear Candy, and I think we should just really get this out of the way. This game looks gorgeous.
It does. It does.
Like, absolutely gorgeous. There's a GIF on the Kickstarter page of, like, the spaceship doing, like a Gundam Wing kind of a thing where you're just shooting bolts of, like, purple lasers everywhere. And it looks fantastic. Like, really, I cannot wait to get my hands on this.
It really does. It's a beautiful game. So let's talk. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, I feel better. It sounds like you guys were just forced into a bad situation with the Galaxy of Fire stuff. And
yeah, but, and well, wait. I want to ask about that, though.
So, oh, okay.
So the shift in the market with, you know, where people were making premium titles, and then suddenly, the wind changed, and they say, okay, there's nothing but free to play anymore, because that's all that people are gonna be interested in, right? So we have to lure them in the door for free, and then with Galaxy on Fire, like what was the freemium content? Was it just like, okay, I've exhausted the content that's in the base game, now I want more, and I pay for it, or what?
No, we had the core game, and then there were two DLCs. And back in the days, Apple approached us and say, hey, guys, what about you get the free app of the week? I mean, what do you say if you get the free app of the week globally? And of course, you do that. And what we did, we put the game that initially cost $10, we put it to free. And the only thing that we were selling was like DLCs. You could own your own space station if you collect your 40-something spaceships. And we had the in-game credits that you can get by killing pirates and stuff and doing missions. You could buy some of those, but we didn't have like the soft and hardware currency thing that you have seen in other free-to-play games, which means we didn't monetize as like the popular or the successful free-to-play titles did. So it was a lot of we generated a lot of downloads and got lots of fans, but at the end of the day, it's like if you have that for free and if there's no monetization scheme in there, you don't make enough money. So to a certain degree, it was like what our investors demanded, come up with a proper free-to-play game that's really designed to make money on in-game credits, speed-ups, all the typical free-to-play things.
Right.
That is something that we tried with a different title then. However,
because that puts you more into like an MMO sort of progression, even in a single player game. So,
true.
So that's a thing that fundamentally I would think has to go clear back to the beginning of the design. And you have to say, okay, we're going to. I think Skype freaked out. Skype went weird there.
I'm still here. All good.
Okay. But you have to go like clear to the beginning of the design and design the game that, okay, this is going to be free to play because all the mechanisms in here need to like pull money out of people's pockets. Right. Because in a case like this, where you have a complete game that's well balanced and just works, and then you try to kind of shoehorn free to play into there, then, you know, I guess you guys, from what you said, it sounds like, you know, that's what your experience was, is, you know, people get the game for free and play that, and then we get a small number of adopters that actually pick up the premium content. But it's a lot less than what your number of downloads is, right? So, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So,
and you cannot turn a game that has been marketed as a premium game into a free-to-play game, because obviously then everybody hates you who paid for the game, and that's, I mean, obviously for a reason. Yeah, and that's why we came up with Galaxy of Fire Alliances, the free-to-play strategy MMO, right? So that was our attempt to enter the free-to-play market back in the days with Fish Labs.
Which I was also sad never made it to the PC, because that looked awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just looking at, like, the PC is kind of the last refuge of premium titles, right? So
on console as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, very, very true on console as well. So, yeah, people don't mind paying for console games.
Yeah, but
You go. That's why we moved on.
Yeah, well, I just see, like, the shift in the PC market, right? Because we see a lot of this freemium stuff coming to PC now. Like, if you go to Steam and you just look at, like, free games, and you'll have, like, 100 different screens of all this free stuff that's coming out. And I just wondered, like, with all of that getting shoveled into the market, does it make it hard? Well, I know it makes it hard, but to what degree, in your perception, does it make it more difficult as a premium developer to actually get noticed? It's like if I have your game that I'm going to pay $20 or $10, you know, whatever your price point is, versus, well, I can dip my toe in this other game for free. You know, is that something that you kind of resent? You know, it's like,
it's a good question, absolutely. But you could also see it the other way around. If it kind of, in quotes, everybody does free to play now on PC and more, we stand out even more because we're sticking to premium, right? And so far, we just added to the FAQ section on our Kickstarter page. Somebody asked if there would be microtransactions in the game, and we said nope. It's play once, play forever, and people love us for that.
Oh yeah, so, people don't know what to do if there's no microtransactions.
People doesn't like to be nickel and dime. That's it. So, I mean, yeah. At least our audience.
So before you guys release, can I buy the spaceships for $100?
Oh god!
That's a reference, you know, to certain
to a couple of games now. Anyway, so Everspace. This is very exciting because we were talking about this a little bit beforehand. It's a space shooter roguelike, and we here on the Space Game Junkie podcast love roguelikes. I mean, love.
Except for FTL, which Brian can't stand to play.
Well, I don't hate FTL. It's just
no, it FTL gives me, hates it, you.
It really does hate me, and it gives me horrible anxiety. That's why I can't play it. But other roguelikes, not so much. So when I saw that you were doing a roguelike space shooter, I was like, that's very exciting. So you were saying that, like, you guys were split on the whole roguelike thing? So let's get into that. So how did the idea of doing a, like, first/third-person roguelike shooter come about?
As I just pointed out, it's our team was pretty much split half and half. So some of our guys really love roguelike. They played Rogue Legacy, Binding of the Isaac, all those great roguelike titles. And the other half was more like, I don't know, constantly dying, start from scratch. Seriously, isn't that kind of frustrating? And me in particular, I was concerned about alienating our fan base, Galaxy and Fire, because there was like, you had an autosave, you had save slots, your progression was saved, you had a storyline, everything. So I'd say everything that you don't find in a roguelike. But our team was, some of our team members were really very strong and said, no, this is great. And if you played it, then you get it. And I was like, no, I don't know. And our creative director wasn't so crazy about it either. Mm. So he said, no, I want to have a story and great characters and such. And you know what? I changed my mind after playing Shadow of Mordor. And I have to say, I really suck at the game. I love it. It looks gorgeous. And like the whole Lord of the Rings setting and the production values and everything. And I died so much. But every time I die, I get some credits. And eventually, I can use those credits, get more skills, abilities, and then I can kick some butt, right? Oh. And I have my revenge, and I kill that orc. And I said, this is how roguelike works. So, yes, if I suck, well, it takes a little bit longer, but I die, and then I get more points, I get better, and then I have my revenge. And they also have a very nice way to present their story. So I went back to the team, said, now I know what you mean. I get it. But do me a favor. First, because of our fan base, but also as a personal preference, I want to have some sort of progression. Don't take everything away from me. Don't make it so unforgiving. Like it needs to feel good. Like dying needs to feel, oh, I achieved something. Okay, I died. That sucks. But at the same time, I have something new, right? I have a motivation to come back. And then they came. Then we came up with this, okay, you can keep your big upgrades, if you have a new engine, if you have a new set of wings, those kind of things. We won't take that away from you because you worked really hard for that to get it. And the next time you're out in space, you will have an easier life. And then on top of that, we said, well, if we want to have a story, how can we tell a story in a roguelike where you have to die a lot? And other than Shadow of Mordor, you always start at the same point. So we had to come up with something.
That's what I wanted to ask. Yeah, I wanted to ask how that works.
So I don't want to spoil too much. Let's put it this way. Dying, your death, and the death of other characters in the game, the whole story is about dying and coming back. And so you will encounter other other characters, and there will be fights. And of course, you need to win those fights. If you lose, still you have something that you can take with you from that fight. There will be story bits told every time you die or another important character for the story dies. And since this is a roguelike, we don't know when and where you meet those characters, because every time you start, we roll the dice and we don't know what's happened next, right? So we have to come up with something that works with like projections into the future story-wise, but also things that happened in the past. And sooner or later, you find all those pieces of the puzzle that fits together, and then everything is part of a greater event at the end of your journey. And the more you play, the more you understand, who am I? Why I am doing this, right? And so that keeps you motivated, not only in terms of like having a constant challenge of the rogue mechanics, but also the story you get a little bit more every now and then. And plus, if you meet side characters, since this is a roguelike, you can decide, I talk to this guy, I do the mission for him, I start shooting at him, I rather kill him and try to get his loot. Well, and obviously, if you kill him, he's gone. And the story is gone. You will never know what this guy was about to tell you. So it's really your decision. What do you do with those characters? Am I killing my quest guy, so to speak, or not? You just kill him. But then the quest is lost. But maybe he has super cool loot, but you don't know that.
Since you played Shadow of Mordor, because they have that whole promotion system in with the enemies, where if you go and you kill one guy, then the underlings get promoted up, and you know, and if somebody kills you, then they get more powerful. So do you have anything like that in play? Because that would be very interesting to see come into a space game, like maybe if they were like pirates or something and had
Space games do not usually have like named, like a lot of the bad guys you fight in space games are just generic pirates or generic fanatics, you know, usually don't have an ace or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I would like for once to have somebody that I see their name and I avoid them because I know that I'm not tough enough to get him yet.
Oh shit, it's that guy. Yeah.
Ideally. So that is something for our later stretch goals. Some sort of nemesis system. So we call it rival system. I mean, that's not set in stone, but something like that. So holy shit, I rather make sure I don't see, I pass that guy. Maybe I go switch on the cloak and make sure he doesn't see me, and I sneak past, those kind of things. And maybe the next time you have a much better equipment, and then you say, well, hello, everybody. How about a warm welcome? And you send a nuke over to him.
Oh, nice. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I'm looking at the stretch goals now.
Yeah, that's not unveiled yet, so I gave you a little head start on this. So we have that up on our sleeves, depending where the campaign goes.
Well, right now, according to ClickTrack, I just looked, this fluctuates as the campaign goes, but right now, you're about around 40% of your goal, which is great, you know, and you're trending toward 234% of your goal. So, I mean, that fluctuates during a campaign, obviously, but that's pretty good. I mean, that shows that people want this.
Yeah, and there's also we do have private investors, I call them, so basically friends and family, people who want to support us. So they don't have a say in the creative direction. Actually, they don't even care, and they don't understand how to make games. They just want to help us. And this whole Kickstarter campaign, yeah, that's really awesome. And this whole Kickstarter campaign is sort of a green light proof of concept for them. So they will invest more into the title the more the community invests into it.
Right. So let's talk about a little bit about the game. So basically you play a pilot in I'm not sure. Are you a lone pilot? Are you in a military? Are you in the military? I mean, how does that work?
You are on your own, but you will meet other pilots.
Sure. And you basically do these missions. Now, you basically, like, it sounds like you have these randomly generated levels, and they're absolutely gorgeous. And so are the levels, are they mission-based, or can you kind of fly around and find missions within them, or you can explore them? How do, like, the levels work? Because that's a big thing about procedural games, or is level generation. So how do the levels work?
You can explore them. So the game starts... you find yourself in the hangar. There's a ship, and then there's just a destination coordinate. That's all. That's all that we give you. We don't explain who you are. We don't explain anything about those coordinates, but you will find them. You fly out and say, well, obviously, the only information that I have, so I rather try to get there. And then it's on you which systems you pick. And obviously, depending on your radar settings and so on, your sensors, you get more information about the systems around you, which are dangerous, which systems have special resources. Some may be unknown. There may be an anomaly sometimes that you can investigate. But you can also just say, no, I pass. I just move on and go to the next system. So at Gamescom, somebody said, well, it sounds like you're doing this is the love child of Freelancer and FTL. So, and I'd say, well, that's a very good explanation, right? Mm. Have you played Out There on mobile? It's also a great roguelike.
Oh, yeah, game. I love that one. I love
and
that one.
And super cool. And we just combine that with those gorgeous visuals and have really good controls, action-focused controls, so we are not a sim. And so we don't have, like, thrust and anti-thrust, so it's pick up and play and action and in your face.
The control, because I revisited Galaxy of Fire last night to kind of remind myself how that played out. And yeah, the controls in that were really tight. Like I said, very Freelancer-esque, but like a lot of other games tried to do Freelancer-type controls, and none of them really besides you guys nailed it like they did. I mean, you guys nailed it as well, but like you play stuff like Dark Star 1 or whatever one that was and a few other games, and they get close. But you guys really nailed just the fluidity and the seamless and the I don't know if seamless is the right word, but it just flows, you know, just like you're moving the mouse and you move how you feel you should move, and it just works right. You know, so you guys nailed that. So I have every confidence in the world that you're gonna nail it with this one as well.
Well, you know, but Brian, looking at the new one, it actually it reminds me a little bit, not entirely, but a little bit of Zigfrak.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah, it does.
Zigfrak's a relative unknown in the market, but
which is sad because it's an excellent game. It's an excellent little ARPG shooty thing, which is crazy fun.
Yeah, instead of being like a roguelike, it's more Diablo in space, kind of, you know, a lot of loot pinata ships. You know, they just explode into, like, you know, things that you can pick up. But it's kind of neat. And looking at this, it kind of gives me a vibe where it's like, okay, this is going to be a little bit more hardcore than that. But still, you know, kind of like emphasis being on fun and accessibility more so.
So I wanted to ask you, were mentioning, Michael, about the levels, how like you might be able to go forward and like pass on you see an anomaly, but you don't have the stuff, you don't have the right sensors to deal with it or something like that. Can you go back and forth between the levels you have already visited and the levels, like, it's not like, is it like really that non-linear that you can just go back and choose where you go next, but can you also go back to where you've already been?
No, everything is as everything is generated randomly.
Oh, okay.
We don't have a fixed persistent world.
Oh wow!
Like you have in other snowboards, everything. If you don't take the opportunity to investigate into something,
it's gone.
And actually, we want to have that.
That's even better.
Then,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Then it matters. Then, yeah. But if you can come back and it's still there, so then you could grind, right? You go from system to system.
Yeah.
But every time we throw you in situations where you have to balance what's the risk reward mechanic here. So do I want to engage with those pirates and try to loot them, or I just I hide and go around them and go for the safer path and collect some resources and make it to the next system by that.
Right. And that sounds like it makes the choices on the fly a lot more interesting, which is what you want. You want that moment-to-moment gameplay to be really like, what do I do next? What do I do next? What do I do next? Which is what you want in a game like this, it sounds like. So you said collecting resources, and that's something I wanted to touch on. It sounds like, because you have a crafting system too. So it kind of sounds like as you play, because I read somewhere like you could land on an asteroid and get fuel. If you run out of fuel as you play?
No, it's not landing. You may have seen the GIF that you have seen with the laser. So you slice that asteroid to bits, and then you have fuel bits that you collect, and those fill up your hyperdrive, and then you can jump to the next system.
Oh, that GIF, by the way, is absolutely gorgeous, where you're slicing that asteroid. That is beautiful. I think I might have gotten a little confused with Galaxy of Fire last night, where you do land on the asteroid, and you have that kind of drilling mini game, which I did enjoy that, by the way. So let's talk about the crafting, because it sounds like you can craft on the fly.
Yes, you can do. You have blueprints that give you access to certain higher class propulsion systems, weapons, and whatnot. And with the resources that you collect during your run, you can craft those things.
And so you're not slaved to, like so many space games, you have to go back to a space station to put that on, you know, but it sounds like that's not the case here.
That is for the major upgrades. So for instance, if you wouldn't want to install a new engine or a new set of wings, it would be, even if it's a game, very unrealistic. You're just on your journey and say, hey, I have a new set of wings, ploink, and then you have a bigger engine all of a sudden. Well, we could do that, and of course we are breaking a lot of rules of physics here, but we
whatever.
Found out that yeah, whatever, it's a game, and that's kind of awkward. So now those major upgrades, those happen on the carrier where you start. Like the minor things, those happen on the run, and also repairing your ship. So you will have damage, and then you have to decide. So I have valuable resources. Should I upgrade my current weapon, or instead I rather repair my hyperdrive or the shields, the armor, the weapons, and whatnot.
All right, and it's the same resources to do either of those things.
Exactly. So that's, again, although it's an action game, there's a strategic component to it that you have to decide where you spend your resources. And again, it depends what's your personal playstyle. So if you prefer to go aggressive, I assume you invest your resources into weapons, whereas if somebody is more into exploring and getting resources, you might upgrade your shield.
Oh, right. Okay, that sounds amazing. So you mentioned a carrier. Is that a persistent part of the game that you can fly back to? Like, how does the carrier work?
Well, you start there. Every time you die, you start back on that carrier.
I see. Okay.
But there will be other places in the game where other characters start. And you will meet them sooner or later.
Oh, that sounds great. So basically you go through and each system can be an opportunity to meet someone or to have a battle or to find some resources or to find...
Or somebody who helps you, or somebody who seduces you, or somebody who betrays you. You don't know.
Oh. And so like the people you meet, they can give you missions on the fly as well. Like, I need help doing this.
Yes.
You know, help me clear out this sector or something like that.
And again, you can decide, you know what, I don't care. I don't want to help you. So that is something that we also took from Galaxy and Fire. Then people said, well, I love, or they loved that we had a storyline that you could follow, but you hadn't had to. So you could always take generic side missions. But in this case, it's like if somebody is offering you a side mission and you don't take it, the opportunity is gone.
Oh, sorry. Someone was asking in the chat. So you interact. That's a good question. On the carrier that you start on, will there be other characters you can talk to as well? Will there be like people you can talk to on the carrier? Will there be like a bar, you know, like on the Tiger's Claw? Will there be a bar? Will there be a hangar and blah, blah, blah?
No, there's nobody going to tell you who you are, why you're there, and what's going to come next. You're absolutely clueless. You have to think about this.
I kind of love it. Oh, my God. I want to play this. I wish we had a build. But it sounds like it's way too early for that.
Yeah, it is. We're working on that.
Yeah, it sounds like you – I think I read you just started working on this year.
Yes, we started early this year. That's correct.
Oh, my God. And it's already that gorgeous. I mean, just by the GIFs in this video.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I have to say, it's really a team that has been working together for the last 10 years on space games on pretty much any platform. So I think that's one of the reasons why we made good progress. And then also, I mean, I have to say that working with Unreal 4 it's a blast. We love it. It's literally the guys are doing things in days that would have taken us months prior with our own tech. So it's just amazing.
Well, now, did you look at other engines before you chose Unreal? Did you look at Unity and the other ones, or did you just go straight for Unreal? Because now it's like there's this choice in engine these choices in game engines where if you want to make a game, you've got multiple options, which is relatively new in the gaming world, it seems.
Well, that is something we definitely have to thank mobile for, because this market is so big and Unity really opened it up. So kudos to them to come up with a new business model, which I believe made Epic open up as well. And that was just the right thing to do. So back at Fish Labs, we hadn't had the chance to work with Unreal because it was out of range for us to afford.
Sure.
I have to say, I've never asked for it. So you could blame me on that. So one of my management mistakes wasn't not going back to Epic saying, well, I don't know how much it is, but it's probably too expensive. But I could have asked, but I didn't. Anyways. So back in the days, we have been working with Unity on a few projects. And our take is, so it's great for prototyping. I think it's great for a mobile title, but at the end of the day, it's a black box. Whereas with Unreal, if you want to go with almost infinite possibilities and with the maximum quality and also with a certain perception about the technology in the market, it's just a different caliber. And last year, we have been working for a top-tier console publisher, and he brought Unreal to the table and said, hey, guys, what do you think about Unreal? Do you want to hands up, who's going to work with that or want to work with that? And all the hands went up and said, that's awesome. That's how we got into Unreal. So the whole team has been working with Unreal 4 since early last year.
Right.
And then that title unfortunately didn't make it into full production simply because they had a competing title in their portfolio. So that happens. But at the end of the day, it was kind of ironic. So it was a good thing for us because we were off the hook. So we could do the kind of space game that we always wanted to do and with a tech that we had been then familiar with. So that was a pretty good head start for us.
Was it a difficult transition to move into the Unreal Engine?
No, it was just so I'd say after 2 weeks or so, we had the first build running and that looked great already. And then
2 weeks?
Yes.
Holy shit.
It's the blueprint system is awesome. It's you get things done in days that would have taken us months or let's say weeks.
Yeah. So wait, Unreal, the engine has a blueprint system?
Yeah, it does.
How does that work?
Oh, it's pretty straightforward. I'm not a coder myself, but I say even I could do it. It's you just open up the functions and you connect blueprints to each other. You have your parameters. You don't write a single line of code unless you want to achieve something super special, something in particular that hasn't been covered by blueprints yet. And you could also use the blueprints just for prototyping. And if you want some extra optimization for it, you could do it in C++. So there are certain things like I know that Sven, our tech guy, works on AI stuff. So he plays around with blueprints. Yeah. And once he found a way to do it the right way, then certain things he puts into C++ code for more speed and performance issues. Improvement. Yeah.
So that makes it even easier. It sounds like it makes it even easier to develop than I would have initially thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, obviously, it's an advantage. For instance, Marco, our lead technical artist, he rigs shaders by himself for our proprietary engine.
Yeah.
And for him, it was very, very easy to get up and running with Unreal because he knew all the technical things, how to write a shader. And he said, well, this is so much easier now, but he knew what he does and how the shaders work. And Unreal gave him the tools to achieve great results much, much faster.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. So I wanted to ask you, is it the engine that allows you to not only have, you know, this crafting on the fly, but also the module based damage that you're promoting? Because it sounds like you can have individual modules get damaged, like your life support, or it looks like individual weapons. Is that how that works?
Yeah, absolutely. So it really depends what gets damaged. So we haven't designed yet, so that will be part of the alpha testing. If we take into account where your ship has been hit and then a certain system breaks down, or if it's just randomly, or if it's a combination of that. So for instance, if you get a hit from behind, then it's more likely that your engines break down. Instead if you got hit from the side, then it's more likely your weapons fail, and so on.
That's, oh man. So wait, what would, now, if that happened, if your engines got knocked out, you'd eventually just probably just get whittled down until you're killed, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, of course, we can make it that you just go half speed. Maneuverability goes down, those kind of things. So it's not a on and off switch, and it's not only just a numeric value. So it really has an impact on your gameplay depending what system is damaged and how much.
Oh, I see.
Is there going to be any, like, workshop support or any type of modding support for this game?
Very good question. We had that on Kickstarter asked a lot. We haven't decided on that yet, but as much as to our knowledge, Unreal supports that, and we're big fans of mods ourselves. So right now I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do that, but it's not on our priority list. First, we need to get a great game
right
out there.
Sure.
I mean that makes sense. It's when you have something procedural like this, throwing mods in probably could gum up the works. Whereas if you had something a little more linear, you know, that might make.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, you could, you know, someone could add in their own ship colors, or maybe like.
Oh, you know, I see. Or add a gun add pieces of loot, you know, or new types of asteroids or something.
But I mean, like he said, you know, they're still working on the base game. But I was just curious; I didn't know if it was something that they were going to throw in just yet.
Now I saw; I think it was in one of the GIFs that your life support can get hit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens? Like, because I don't know if you played Elite Dangerous, but when your life support, when your canopy gets shattered, in that you hear yourself start to suffocate slowly. At one point, is that something that will happen in this game as well? Like, if your life support gets hit, will you have to either somehow fix the thing, or like what are the options in that kind of scenario if your life support gets hit?
Well, I mean, if you run out of oxygen,
right,
you die.
Sure, but I mean, how do you fix that? Do you fly back to your carrier? Do you try and get some resources to fix it on the fly?
You can gather more oxygen as a resource. Oxygen will be one of the resources.
Oh, okay. And,
yeah. And if you die, you start at a carrier again.
Oh, I see. Now, well, like, so it sounds like there are different resources you can mine from different, like, will different asteroids have specific resources, or will the asteroids have like a random resource that you find once you blow them up? Like, will it be like, oh, is that an oxygen asteroid and that's a metal asteroid? You know, is that sort of thing? How is that going to work?
Yeah, we definitely will have different resources. Right now, I cannot say how many, because obviously that has a big impact on the overall gameplay. But certainly, I mean, again, look at FTL or out there. They had plenty of resources.
Right.
I'm not sure if we're going to go crazy like that, because we also have the combat system. And we want to avoid that this gets too complicated, that you're fiddling around with too many types of resources.
Right.
So that is something we will see from our alpha test, how that goes and what's the feedback from the community.
Oh, okay. All right. Because, what I was mainly curious about is, like, if you need oxygen, how do you know when an asteroid might have oxygen? You know what I mean? Like, how do you, like...
Simple answer to that, you have sensors. And I mean, depends on the equipment of your ship. You will have sensors. Those sensors will have different ranges. Those sensors will have different capabilities. And if you're equipped with the right stuff, the right gear, you know what those asteroids provide. And if you don't have such a sensor, it's like best of luck. You just give it a try.
Oh, I see.
Maybe it's just dirt. But maybe it's something super cool.
So if you needed oxygen, you didn't have the right sensors, and you mined like 8 asteroids as your timer just goes down and down and down. And like, I can't find oxygen. Dead.
Yeah. Pressure. Ah.
That sounds awful yet awesome at the same time. I'm getting very so you start off with a ship and you go to a destination, you could upgrade your ship. So are you going to be able to have one ship that you constantly upgrade? Are you going to be able to, like, maybe acquire different ships as blueprints, for example? How is that going to work?
You start with one ship, and we will have adding the possibility of flying other ships as a stretch goal. That is something that we learned from Galaxy and Fire. We had, I think, 40 or 50 ships in Galaxy and Fire, and I think it were only 4 or 5 that the players really used. So the majority of them was just a waste, and we should have put our resources somewhere else instead. So this time around, we thought we rather have one ship, and you upgrading this, so you could say to a certain degree you are the ship. So it's like your upgrading progression is with this one ship, and of course the reward in dying is going back to the carrier, upgrade your ship. And if you would constantly change that, there is no such a reward. It's like, okay, I get another ship, but in this case it's like every time you die you gradually improve, which is like, again, what Shadow of Mordor does. If you die, you get your XP points, you go back to your skill tree and look for new skills that you can unlock, and you're like, yeah, I died, I just got those 5, 10, 50 XP points that were missing to make it to the next level in my skill tree.
Okay, so...
You know what thought process that reminds me of? That reminds me of Battlestar Galactica, whenever you would kill... Like they said in the show that, like, when you die, what's a better training tool than death to come back and get better and stuff like that with, like, Cylon Raiders and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I think about Edge of Tomorrow when we were doing the design of the game. We watched Edge of Tomorrow and I love that film.
Oh yeah.
And Tom Cruise is like, no, don't kill me, don't kill me, don't kill me. And she's like, bam, shoots him. Say, well, you have another life. And you come back better. And then he knows a little bit more. And then he does all this stuff, meets the same people, and they come up with something. Say, yeah, I know that already. And he comes with a different answer and progresses until the next point. Then he dies, starts from scratch with the experience, and has another run.
The fact that you referenced that movie in regards to this game just makes me that much more excited about it, because that movie is goddamn amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I want to watch it again right now.
Right? Okay. Me too. Yeah, I love that.
But it sounds like in terms of ship progression, you're going more the shooter route than the freelancer route. Because, like, in freelancer, yeah, there's like a billion ships, but you know which ones you want to fly eventually.
Yeah.
You know. And so you just work toward them. So that sounds pretty cool. Give them fewer yet more awesome goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Which sounds like, I didn't know that there were so few ships that people flew in Galaxy of Fire. I don't remember how many I flew.
Yeah, and you know what? If you design all those ships and you spend a lot of work into this and a lot of passion, it's kind of disappointing. It's like, what? Nobody bought this. This is cool, or just a few. And but there was a, you know what? There was a flaw in game design. We simply made too many ships pretty similar. And there was only, you know, when you buy a new ship, you do that because it has better abilities, better stats. And there were certain ships that were so much better, like in the next class, you just drop anything else. And with better game design, I mean, we're learning, right? You come to the point and say, no, we just need a few ships. We're not, it's not like a racing game where you have, oh, it's great, I ride a Porsche, an Audi, and you know, you have fans of certain brands of cars.
True, right.
If you do a space game and where you don't have, let's say, fame for certain brands and such, the only meaning to have a new vessel is better abilities, maybe a little bit of design, but it's basically because of certain gameplay mechanic. So if you don't design the game in a way that there's enough motivation to get the new ship, you did something wrong. And clearly that was one of our flaws in Galaxy and Fire. With 40 ships, kind of cool. We should have had, I'd say, 5.
Right.
And make a deeper progression within those ships, or have more like class types, like a scout, a gunship, and so on. So
right, that reminds me of Privateer, which I think had like 4,
mm-hmm.
like 4 ships, and that was it. And they were clear like what they did. Like you had the fighter,
yeah.
you had the big cargo ship, and then you had the intermediate cargo fighter thing. So I see where I still that totally works.
So I have a question because I'm watching the video, you know, that we've got on loop, and one thing keeps coming by, and it's the guy with the Oculus Rift on, and
mm-hmm.
so obviously you're going to have support for that, but I also see that he's got a Leap Motion glued onto the front of it, and I'm wondering what you're doing with that, because I borrowed one of those from a friend of mine and I could find absolutely no use for it whatsoever. So
yeah.
So the fact that you've actually figured out something to do with it impresses the hell out of me.
What is it? What is the thing, Jim?
It's a Leap Motion. It's basically a hand tracker.
It's gesture control, 3D gesture control within VR.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, the minimum that we can see, and then those are things that we have played around with yet, is simply by operating the game like menu style and so on. And while we won't have anything during combat, because obviously you have one hand is on a mouse, one hand is on a keyboard.
Right.
Things that we could see is like if you upgrade your ship, you could have these gesture controls, like in 3D space, you spin your ship, look from different angles, pick certain things, and then apply those upgrades to your ship. These things, we believe, could be super cool to do that with Leap Motion, just as an idea.
Well, I'm just, is it like all proprietary code that you had to write to do that? Because the normal the way that you set that thing is behind your keyboard facing up, right? And then whenever you get your hand mm-hmm. in front of the screen, so it actually, to kind of clue Brian in, it's basically like a Kinect that sits on your desk, but it only watches your fingers, right?
Right.
And it sits behind your keyboard and faces up. So when you get your hand between the keyboard and the screen, it's watching what your fingers are doing. So then you can manipulate things on the screen. Theoretically, it's in theory, it's a lot better than it was in practice, at least with the stuff that was shipping back when I tried it. But for you guys to change the orientation of it and actually stick it on your face, watching your hands in front of your face, that's kind of a different angle than it's used to. So I didn't know if you had to like scratch write all the code for that, or they actually have something that it'll adjust.
Yeah, let's put it this way. We're in close talks with Leap Motion. I met the guys at E3. Really great guys, and they saw what we were up to. I showed them an even earlier version of what you have on Kickstarter right now of Everspace, and they said, "Oh, it would be super cool to have that tag on there." And so we were really early days playing around with it, and we said, "Okay, those are the things that we could imagine to work." And I cannot unveil too much at this point, but they support us in a great way to get that.
Yeah, because if you get first-party support on it, then it'll be good. Yeah, because it's the thing of, like, I like the idea of that thing so much. Uh-huh. It's just that nobody had come up with a way to actually use it for anything practical yet.
So is it kind of like a Minority Report thing?
Yeah, Iron Man. I would say that the closest right now would be Iron Man. When Robert Downey Jr. is in his workshop down there and talks to Jarvis and all this shit flies around and he sees the blueprints and he turns them in 3D space and so on. So imagine that for our upgrade process of your ship.
You know what you should also do with that? Like, you have this missile launcher that can launch like 80 missiles and you just tap the targets on your screen.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Yeah, something like that.
I think that would break the controls. So right now we're looking for things to implement that outside of the core combat.
I see. So speaking outside of the core combat, Odyssey in the chat mentions, he said, "Give us a Deep Space Nine bar," and that got me thinking. Are there going to be places in this places you could stop, like space stations and stuff where you could meet people, or is it all going to be in space in your cockpit?
No, we will have bigger, constructions where you meet people and so on, and where also story bits could be unveiled, and like safer places to refuel, get oxygen and so on, and those places could be also used to interact with other characters.
Oh, very cool. Okay, that's good.
So, because that is something people liked in Galaxy Fire. Like, every station had a bar where you met all those strange guys offering you, jobs.
Yeah, I mean, that adds flavor. That's kind of a trope now, but it works. You know, like Privateer did it and Freelancer did it. And
oh, yeah, because it adds to the lore and the whole setting.
Oh, sorry, that was Zachon. Yeah, sorry, Odyssey, I'm being corrected in the chat room because I'm an idiot. So it sounds like you have this story progression that you go through and you have to die and you keep moving and you keep moving. So what happens when you get to the end? Can you start a whole new story and it's different? Or is there a new game plus mode? Like, what happens when you finally get to that end point and you want to keep playing?
Yeah, so this major event that happens when you met all the other guys, this will unlock a new stage of the game.
Right.
And we will have a way that you can keep playing this. We haven't decided yet if we really continue with the story after that point. So that will take about 20 hours to get there. And that we think that's a scope that feels about right.
Yeah, that ain't nothing. Yeah.
And
so that's a good length. Yeah.
Okay. And after you reach that point, there's this major event, and then there will be a new situation for yourself. Let's put it this way. And this new situation could be a start for DLC or even a sequel, depends how successful we are.
Oh, okay. That's cool. But it sounds like there's going to be enough variety that that even when you finish, you want to start again to see different options and different systems and different, you know, like, oh, I helped that guy last time. If I run into someone like that again, I'm going to kill him and see what happens. Yeah, so it sounds like there are enough options in the moment-to-moment gameplay that'll make you want to come back and try different things. Like, I was going to say, last time I did a lot of cloaky flyaway stuff. This time I want to shoot everyone, you know?
Right. And if you have a super great experience and said, well, my experience was just awesome and so on, we're thinking of that you can pass your game seed to a friend. So the way we roll the dice for this, obviously that's just a very little piece of code. You can share to others and then they try that. That is something we haven't tried yet, but theoretically, concept-wise, this should work. That is something that we have as our social feature, if you want to call it like that. So, hey, rogue experience in Everspace.
Or maybe not even make it a file. Like this game we were playing, Space Beast Terrorfight, their seeds are numbers. They're these string of eight numbers. Mm-hmm. So maybe have a unique string that'll generate that particular Galaxy for people that they can just share in like a post or an email or whatever. Maybe that might even work too.
Yep.
That, I don't know. It gives me like flashbacks to Nintendo save codes. Back in the... you remember having to like type in that thing on Metroid because you couldn't actually save the game. You just had to write a code down and the... Wow.
Sorry. Same thing with like, a lot of games back there.
That's right.
You know, like Mega Man.
Did a lot of games do that back then?
Oh yeah. Because they didn't figure out to put batteries in the cartridges until many years into the whole Nintendo generation.
Ah, there you go.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. Okay. Right now the Kickstarter is doing well. How are you finding that? Because I have found when we ask people how that's going, like either they didn't expect it to be another full-time job or they were prepared. Like, how did you prepare for Kickstarter and how are you finding it so far?
We started preparing Kickstarter 4 months ago.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And I'd say you don't have time for anything else but Kickstarter.
I believe.
In combination with preparing Greenlight on Steam, in combination preparing reaching out to the press at Gamescom, and at least marketing-wise, we are in crunch for the last 3 weeks or so. The weekend before Gamescom, Friday was until 5 in the night, Saturday 4, Sunday 3. One of our guys didn't sleep at all. He just worked the night through, went to the train, off to Gamescom. Every day at Gamescom, 10 o'clock first meeting, all the way to 2 a.m. in the night. On the one side, it's super exhausting. On the other side, it's so exciting. And when the first backers coming in and you get that feedback, also the feedback on Greenlight. I mean, we got 15,000 yes votes with an 86% acceptance rate, or I don't know how to say that, positive feedback. So by average, you get like 45% yeses versus nos, and we got 86%. Made it up to number 2 out of 1,500 games waiting for Greenlight. That's just awesome. And that keeps you going. And when those pledges come in and it goes up, I would say there's nothing better in the world than that. but it's challenging. I think we have 10 channels where we get feedback from the community. So it's the comments on the Kickstarter's page, it's direct messages. We got 2 Twitter accounts. You get direct messages on both. I got my personal Facebook account. I got a corporate Facebook account and a game Facebook account. You get your messages. You got email. You have YouTube. Everything. And press. Oh, and then we are using MailChimp for reaching out to the press and to our fans, and you get emails there as well.
Oh, dear God.
So, yeah.
Oh, dear God.
That's a game in itself.
Yeah, it sounds like.
Managing that, handling that.
I've obviously been tempted there. Like, the more people do Kickstarter and stuff, the more, like, I work in SEO. I could do this sort of thing for people. Mm-hmm. I want to do this sort of thing for people. I've been tempted to, like, make my own little side business where I do this sort of thing for people so you guys can focus on the game. That sounds really tempting right now. Actually, but it does every time I talk to people about Kickstarter, they say how exhausting it is. But you guys have a great pitch, a really great, because I see so many Kickstarters for space games where they don't have enough imagery, or they don't have enough video, or they don't have enough text, or like their text isn't very clearly written, and like people are like, what are you actually doing? And like, so you guys, I gotta say, you guys have a very well made, very clear, like, I love the reward tier chart. I love shit like that, you know, where it's very okay. clear, you know, very clear, this is what you get in the very, very like transparent and clear, and I just love that.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's not like this is just the work of somebody else and myself. It is really, it's a complete team effort. Everybody had a say on anything. And we're using Confluence to do all our internal stuff. And you should see how the team, in quotes, was yelling at certain things I was writing said, no, you cannot write that. That's not the way it is. And so that's the right, it has the wrong tone. How about that? So we were discussing on word level sometimes. So no, this is, it really, we really wanted to make sure that we describe exactly the kind of game we want to make to get that pitch out and then collect the feedback from our fans, from the community, and then work together on it. And I think that is something that so far we have accomplished. We have a solid foundation. So there's this very positive feedback, and now we want to take it from there, keep working with the community. I don't know if you've seen, I've updated the FAQs last night, 2 o'clock or something.
Oh.
And added more stuff. Because obviously, I mean, if you open up, a lot of questions come in. And right. Then we want to answer all those questions, and we want to make sure this is the game that we're going to do, and as good as possible with the feedback from the community and the budget that we have. So we're not going to promise to anything that we cannot afford, and that's not simply not doesn't work for us, or it's technically not feasible, or we don't have the budget. And we say, no, we cannot do that. But here's what we can do.
Right. And I like that, because Kickstarter is a weird thing where if you try and promise the world and it doesn't look like you can deliver, no one's gonna yeah. back you.
And for God's sake, don't put planetary landings as a stretch goal.
we heard that already, and no, this is not gonna be a stretch goal, not the landing.
This is all space. This kind of game doesn't need planet stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm not bitter. I'm just. Vent.
Oh, stop.
My last sentence there was a hint.
I want a little rover. I want to go roving around on
you guys.
But it's actually a robot dog named Rover, and you get to drive him around. No. Okay.
No, it's not landing.
I said it's not landing.
Oh. Okay. That is a hint of something.
It's not on a planet. It's not landing on a planet. We have something that has different gameplay, but it's not, you're not going to land on a planet. That would be a completely different game.
Oh,
for us.
Wait a minute. Are you saying it's another game you're working on? Is that what you're saying?
You heard it here first.
Let's do this one first, okay?
Yeah, of course.
And then we see how it goes.
So yeah, Jim, you remind me of your probe in Elite Dangerous. They should just call it Muffet.
Yeah, just... exactly. Oh, God.
I'm so glad
that wasn't in the new show. And yeah, I wish that it was on some level.
It wouldn't have worked. That kind of
it would have worked really well. They could have had Trish Pelfer snap its neck in the first show. And then it would have just...
Oh man, you just see the Cylons lighting Daggetts on fire, you know, just shooting them with a laser blast enough to just burn them. Yeah, that's what that show would have done. They would have shown them going extinct.
Yeah, do you know what Brian's talking about? It was the dog. It was like a robot dog that was on the original battle.
Yeah, it had a chimpanzee in it.
Did it?
Oh, okay.
No, it
didn't. I didn't know.
Yeah, that was. That was on the original show. The Daggett had a chimpanzee in it.
What?
I know more about your all 70 show than
so
you
bad
do.
For that chimpanzee.
No, it didn't. Are you serious?
Go look this shit up. I wouldn't lie.
How do you live that down
right now? It did not have a chimpanzee in it. I can't.
Well, in the new one, it would have been played by Andy Serkis.
It was really good. I like that one a lot. Go read up on it, man.
I'm trying to.
I think he's channeling Tweaky or something there.
Beady, beady, beady.
Moffitt was the name of Boxy's Daggett, right?
Yes, I know that. I know that. I know the name. Apparently there's a person nearby named Muffet in Burbank, apparently. I have such a hard time believing this. I think you are totally trolling me. Oh, God, no, you're right. It was named by a chimpanzee. It was played by a chimpanzee named Evolution.
Yep.
The chimpanzee was named Evolution, you guys. That was the name of the chimp that was inside the Daggett named Muffet. Oh, my God. I'm not going to be able to do anything for the rest of the day except think of that. I'm supposed to go to work and be productive, and I won't be able to, like at all. Like, there's no way.
All right.
Sorry. We go on tangents on this show every now and again, Michael. Anyway, so you guys started Everspace earlier this year. How far along would you say you guys are?
We call it a pre-alpha, and we expect to have the alpha early next year.
I have to wait till early next year to play this?
Let's put it this way. If we make very good progress, I'd rather come with the good news and say, well, guys, guess what? We have it a little bit earlier than the other way around. Sorry, it takes longer. So I say now it's going to be early next year.
Oh, and then we're surprised when it's earlier. Yay. Expectations. Yay.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Okay. Excuse me. No, that's fair because you just started working on it earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think I guess it's a double-edged sword to how transparent game development has become, because if you look at Star Citizen, people are like, how come you guys have done shit? And it's like, wait a minute. Games take a long time to make. I forgot that. I'll be honest. I forgot that. Until someone reminded me that, like, Elder Scrolls Online took 7 years to make. And you're like, oh, right. Games take a long time to make. I should relax.
Yeah. There you go. And we're just 14 guys. So, yeah. We don't have the scope like the big titles. Still, things need some time, even if you have more people working on it. So, as we say, 9 women don't give birth to a baby in 1 month. There's certain things that take time.
Right.
Same with game development.
It's tough because...
Sure would make things easier, though, wouldn't it?
it's tough because part of me is like, I want to play this now, and part of me is like, take your time to make it good. So it's this internal thing where it's like, oh, I need it, I want it now, but wait, I want it to be good. I don't want it to be shit, so take your time to make it good.
Nobody will cry if it takes a little bit longer, and...
No.
People will cry about it takes longer, but then once we have a great game, everybody's happy.
People forget about that.
If it's the other way around, if you ship something that's then say, oh, it's out there, everybody excited, and then if it doesn't work, everybody will remember that forever.
That's
true. You delivered a shitty game, and we just don't want to do that, right? We don't want to disappoint. So we make sure that everything is nailed and everything. And this is why we give the alpha and the beta to our fans, to our backers. They can come back with feedback, and so we make sure that it's really everything for the budget that we have, the amount of people that we are, what the platform can deliver, and what the tech can do. It's the best game space shooter that we can possibly do.
And I gotta say, I'm looking at your tiers, which another thing you did right was the spacing out of the tiers. That they're very reasonable. But it amazes me that you have a 7,000 euro tier already. I mean, someone is backed at the 7,000 euro.
Three guys backed. It's
I see. There are 2 7,000 level, and one's limited. Oh, I see. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
See.
No, we didn't expect that at all. So the first one came in day one from a German Galaxy and Fire fan from South Germany.
Whoo.
And we're like, ooh, that's cool. We reached out to him and said, hey, do we know you? And said, no, we don't. I don't know you, but I've played games really the very, very early on in the 80s and everything. I'm super fan of space games. I just love what you do, and I want to support you. And he's a little bit older, so it seems like he can afford it. And he's super friendly, and that was just great. Wow. And then the next day, we were sold out on the 7,000 tier, somebody from the States. Said, oh, I love Galaxy and Fire. It's awesome. I want to be part of the team, and I can't wait to see you, visit the office, and work with you guys on this. And then we got somebody else who pledged already and said, oh, damn, the 7,000 tier is gone. I wanted to have that too, and I want to work with you on that game. And we're like, what can you do? Can you put up another tier for 7K? And we were like,
oh, my God.
Yeah, we're like, well, of course, that would be fabulous and everything. But we don't know what the other two guys are thinking of it, because obviously it dilutes the exclusivity of the top tier reward. So we reached out to them, say, hey, thanks again. And there's a third guy who wants to support us with 7,000 euros. What do you think about that? And say, well, actually, this is awesome because you're getting your funding goals sooner. And we love to have another guy on board. So this is why we opened up another tier.
Wow. That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible. And that's what blows my mind. I keep wondering, like, for 10 years, we had very few space sims, you know, and I'm thinking, developers, there was money on the table. People wanted these things. It's obvious. Look at all the games that are coming out that people are paying for. But
yeah, I think it's both things. The space sim games were the first that were in 3D, because obviously doing stuff in 3D in space is not so complicated compared to running around, for instance, like in Call of Duty or Battlefield, where you have to build a lot of stuff.
That's true.
And so that's why space games were first. Then after a few years, it was like most things you can do in a space game back then with the technology has been done. Then less and less space games were made. First-person shooters came up. And so there was a less of a demand. Publishers went for the big, successful first-person shooters. And with everything, if for a certain time there's an underserved genre, there's a Renaissance. And this is exactly what happened. I mean, if we came up with Galaxy Fire, the first version, that was back in end of 2005 on a Sony Ericsson device.
Oh, gosh.
Screen size was 128 by 128 pixels.
I remember that.
350 kilobytes, and it was a 3D game with a numpad control on a feature phone, and it was fun to play. That's how we started. And Galaxy Fire has in total 30 million installs on mobile devices. So to a certain degree, I think we kind of kicked that off with this renaissance in space games, because you know what? We did a space game on mobile because that was the only thing you could do in 2005. There was no hardware acceleration. Everything was software rendered and so on. So that was it. And with like another space, with another star system, introducing more ships and such, that's how we gradually evolved with Galaxy Fire until the iPhone came. And then all of a sudden you had almost console quality, depending on what generation we're talking of, on your mobile phone. Yeah, and now we're here. Now we are on PC and hopefully on console with Everspace. Yeah,
yeah. I gotta say thank you for coming to the PC market, because for a while it was like all these great games coming out on mobile, and it's like, wait a minute, why isn't the PC getting love? And now the PC is getting lots of love, and I'm very happy about that.
And with a small team like us, or fairly small team, you can do a great game for the PC, because you don't have to bother about free-to-play monetization. You don't need to have a backend. You don't have to have your marketing experts improving the funnel and all this stuff. I mean, we went through all this, RPPU and lifetime value and blah, blah, blah. We all get seriously, it was like I was trying for a year to get Fish Labs another funding round. I talked to literally everybody, and they all said, oh, I don't know, space games, you know, is there really a market? If you're not Star Wars, if you're not Star Trek, it's kind of hard. And we were like, well, but back in the days, we had like 25 million people playing Galaxy on Fire, so what about that? Yeah, but you haven't proved that you can do the monetization. Yeah, and so, long story short, so then, yeah, move on. If the premium model doesn't work for games like that on mobile anymore, we do PC and console. And, of course, our team is so excited with the rendering power that you have, in particular on PC, and then now VR. So, I mean, you are literally in space if you have your VR headset. So, yeah, it feels great. And we still can do mobile, because Unreal supports mobile. And if we hit the stretch goal, of course we will have it. And it's going to be paid. It's not going to be free to play. Pay once, play forever.
See, that's what kind of annoys me about free to play. Like, it still bugs me, because like, it's not, I don't see it as being sustainable in the long term. People don't like being nickel and dimed. I mean, they like getting stuff for free, but they don't like paying, but they don't want to pay for stuff.
Well, no, it's bad on both sides, because it discourages people from buying the premium game, because, hey, I could just waste time with this free thing. But then it also sours the market, because then it's like, oh, well, all these games suck. So
yeah, I've seen only a couple examples where it really works well, like maybe Lord of the Rings Online, and Rift and stuff. Like, it seems to work well for them, but for a lot of places, it doesn't seem to work that great.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it works great in Lords of the Rings Online. Actually, I have a lifetime account in Lords of the Rings Online. I love to play it. That's ooh. Awesome. And I bought that for €120 back then, so that was a bargain if you're really playing it actively. And a very good friend of mine, he's really like on the cheaper side, really very very he's saving his money. And but he wanted to play with us, so he opted in for a free to play account in Lord of the Rings Online. Obviously, he spent more time to get to a certain point. And every now and then, if he wants to go on a raid with us, he had to buy certain content. And he was fine with that because he said, well, no, the experience is great. Now I want to play with my buddies. And they're in a certain area, and I haven't unlocked that yet with my grinding. I have to pay for that. So he put his credit card, paid for that, and we could play together. No hard feelings from neither side. That was very great. Also, I think Turbine does a great job there.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing a good job because they give you enough for free that you feel like you can get somewhere. But like, if you want to get to Moria or whatever, like that, I mean, it costs money to make that. So, you know, it costs money to get there, you know, and and that makes sense. But like, when you got something like Farmville, where if you want your crops to, you know, come earlier, pay us like $2. It's like, screw you.
Yeah. The thing that I like in freemium stuff is whenever it doesn't alter the gameplay, but it is sort of vanity items. It's like an Elite, right? Like, I can buy skins for my ship. I don't need it. It doesn't make the ship perform any different. But if I want it, I can throw them a little bit of money, you know, and that's fine. But, you know, I mean, there's some games that do it right. You know, it's then various like MMOs, you know, where you have different sides of the spectrum, you know, where it's like, well, this thing is free and it's fun and I never need to spend a dime if I don't want to. But then they rely on the people to get in there and say, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, spend a lot of money in here. So, you know, it's one side makes up for the other. But I just kind of, I don't know. I don't know if I fault freemium for screwing up the market as much as I do bundles. And that's a thing. Maybe I should just ask Michael. Have you guys ever put like the first game? Did you ever participate in any bundles with that? And if so, was it worth it?
With Galaxy Fire, you mean? On mobile, no, we hadn't had any bundles back in the days. That wasn't possible on the App Store, as much as I recall it. Galaxy Fire had been part of the Humble Bundle. On Steam.
Yeah, specifically that. I mean, did you guys see a significant return on that? Because I figure it's like, okay, there's 10 games for a dollar. Like, everybody gets, you know, a couple pennies. So do you move enough units to actually feel a difference? Or,
not
are,
so much.
Or are you
not,
losing
not so
$20
much.
Sales?
No, no. I mean, definitely worth it to have the exposure. And even if you don't make that much money, you just have more people out there. And if you have a good game, they talk about it, and then other people might get it for a higher price. But still, it's we're not talking about something where even a smaller team like us could have sustained. So back in the days, Galaxy and Fire 2 on the PC, well, it lacked the DLCs because I had a story, as I said in the beginning, investors, free-to-play on mobile, blah, blah, blah. We wouldn't have made enough money to keep even the small team running for the game back in the days, which is fair because it was a mobile game. Even the code base of the PC game was still the same code that we had been running on the Java feature phones in 2008. So the initial Galaxy Fire 2 was a 1 megabyte Java game. And then gradually we improved the graphics and everything, but the AI, the whole trading, the traveling, all these things had been absolutely identical in the iOS version, even in the PC version, which ended up being 1.2 or 1.5 gigabytes, which is also the reason why it was really code-wise on its last legs. We could not add anything more. The community said, oh, we want to have another DLC, but it was simply the code would have been, I don't know, fallen apart if we had put more into this. So we had to try something new. Then the whole free-to-play shit for us happened. And there you go. Then we start, okay, from scratch, new studio. and without any code-wise any legacy. Mm. So, and obviously with Unreal, a much better tech than we had back in the days with our own tech.
Right. Yeah, I was having a conversation with somebody earlier this morning, and we're just discussing, you know, like what the combination of like freemium games and then the whole bundle picture, and then with Steam, how they do their, like, every quarter, like clockwork, they have a sale where things go 50%, 75% off. And I wonder if the consumer is just being trained, you know, it's like, well, I'll just wait because, you know, this game that just came out today, in 6 months it'll be 75% off, so I'll just delay until then.
We are concerned to a certain degree about this race to the bottom, because that's pretty much the race to the bottom that we have seen on the App Store for paid games.
Right, and it made it a lot more difficult, right? And then also the lack of curation in Steam, because it used to be, you know, there was a barrier to entry there. You had to be a certain quality. And now just about anything gets on there. So you have so much signal to noise, you know, that it's hard to get seen unless you are sort of a AAA title or you get a lot of attention elsewhere that directs people in. So that's a kind of a concern of mine, just, you know, for the hobby that I love, that, you know, I can see where a lot of developers would say, look, this just isn't sustainable anymore because it costs X number of $1,000 to create the game. And if we can't get at least twice that much back, then it's not worth doing.
Yeah, but you know what? That is with every market. In particular, if this is a digital market, if there's access to it from pretty much anywhere around the globe, you're competing with the whole world about this market. And as hard as it is on Steam and also on the App Store, I think there hasn't been a better time to making games than today with all the tools that we have, with stores, with hundreds 100 million plus people signed up with their credit cards on file. Remember how it was in the 90s or something. You had to go through a publisher and they controlled everything. So yes, now there is a lot of competition, but still it's in your hands. It's in your hands what kind of game you do. It's in your hands how do you communicate with your fans. Everything is in your hands. So. Yeah.
It's just the concern of, you know, like I could take 6 months or a year and create something that, you know, that I've put a lot of effort in, and then somebody comes out with some Flappy Bird thing that they made in 15 minutes and they make $1 million.
Yeah, that hurts. I know. You know? That hurts. Yeah, I have to admit. You're like, seriously?
So it almost seems like, let's make as many little things as I can as fast as I can, and one of them.
But again, you know what? I would say our team would not have been able to create something like Flappy Bird, even if we had wanted to.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm not saying this is bad or good. It's just a matter of what you're passionate about. What kind of games do we want to have? And of course, at least for us, this is the case. If somebody writes the stuff that we do, be it in terms of Galaxy Fire or now with Everspace, hey guys, we love what you do, and I buy that game, although it's not finished yet. This reward is so much worth, and this is why you put so much time and effort into this. That's why we love what we do. And I think it shows in the products that we create. And if you do something for a quick buck, it also shows in a product. And there are certain people who would buy the things with a lot of passion, and there are others who say, well, that's just something nice and little, and I just take it as a snack. I'm fine. I go, and I buy it because everybody buys it.
I guess it's not that there are less – kind of like in flight sims, right? Because Brian and I were big on flight sims, you know, back when they actually existed. And – and space games too, you know, and thank God space games are back, right? Because we went through a long period where there was just no such thing as a space game, and you know, so now it's come back into vogue, thankfully. Back whenever flight sims were a thing, I don't think there are any less people that are interested in it now. It's just that whenever big business looks at the chart, right, and they say, well, there's a lot more gamers now but the number of gamers that like this genre are about the same as there were. But if you look at like all the simple little quick games, there's a lot of audience for that that just didn't exist before, right? So I don't think that either genre has actually lost fan base, but it just doesn't look as big in comparison with what's out there in that freemium space, which makes it weird, you know. And it's, if you're looking like from an investor's point of view,
what's that?
I don't know what that was.
I don't know. There's been weird static in Skype the whole time.
I'm still here. I can hear you loud and clear. All okay. Good.
But anyway, no. That's just my observation. Is not like, you know, the people that like that kind of thing never went away. It's just that there's another audience that came in. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the opposite. So the cool thing is, if you have a game that existed genre-wise back in the days, let's say goes back even to the 80s, you still can connect to those guys. But we were only a few. I mean, if you had an C64 in the 80s, you were one of the few back in class, at least that it was in my case. And now everybody is playing mobile games or PC games. At Gamescom, if you see 350,000 people had been to Gamescom in Cologne last week, and you see everybody. You see girls, boys, any kind of age, different types of people there in whatever genre. It's crazy. They dress up at cosplay, and you're among that and say, well, this is great. When I started playing games, I was one of the geeks back in school. And now my partner, he has three kids, son of 10 and two girls, 8 years old, twins, and they all play games. For them, it's normal, right? Like reading a book. So it's not the gamer anymore. So you used to be gamers, and I think it's not true anymore that somebody is a gamer or not, because everybody plays if you're younger.
Oh, right? Yeah, definitely.
So the market is just much bigger now, and so with space games, I know that kids who are like 12 or 14, they're super excited about Everspace because they see all the graphics and stuff. And maybe they're not so crazy about the story that we're putting in there, but they see the action and so on. And if you're a little bit older, you appreciate what we have in terms of storyline there and still like the action and everything. So
right.
It hasn't been a better time to make games than these days.
Yeah.
We really are, I think, in another golden age of PC gaming, because it's just there's so much good stuff out there. And like you said, the tools to make good stuff are more accessible than ever before.
Well, maybe we should look at the mobile gaming as a gateway drug. You know, it's like we get them playing stuff. Because they've got a phone in their pocket, right? So it's not like they have to go out and invest in a Nintendo DS or whatever.
Right,
it's like,
right.
No, you already have this thing. So you know, play our game, and then oh yeah, come over to the PC where we really do this. You know?
Yeah, we have backers for Everspace that I played Galaxy and Fire on my feature phone 1 and 2. I played 1 and 2 on iOS. I got the PC version, and now I want Everspace on any platform it comes out. I mean, those are fans that had been with us for almost 10 years. We have our best Russian guy back in the days. We had a Russian guy who was a super fan of Galaxy and Fire, translated everything. It was a very good localization because he was a fan. He really knew the game inside out. And he reached out to us. Can I do the Russian localization for Everspace and do the community stuff? And we're like, yes, of course. I mean, it's somebody who's with us now for 7 years. The same with the Polish guy. And last week, a guy from Brazil said, well, I love to do the Portuguese version for Brazil for free because simply I love that game. And you're like, how cool is that?
Right. Yeah, it's just such a great time to not only be a gamer, but probably a game developer.
Yeah, well, since you're talking about the international stuff, question about that. So whenever I look at Steam on the numbers, right, I see that primarily, well, there's a lot of people that are customers in America, and then the second largest population on Steam is Russians, and I don't see a lot of games that are, well, there's a lot of games that are developed in Russia and then localized over here, and some of them you wouldn't even know, but it's like I don't see a lot of games that actually target that market too much that come from America that way. But I see a lot of games come from them to us.
Yeah, which is I think it's a huge opportunity that is missed here. So when we added the Russian translation a passionate localization for Galaxy on Fire, the downloads really peaked. And Russia was the number four market for us on iOS back in the days with Fish Labs, simply because we had the Russian localization and because there are so many of them. By the time they had a lot of iOS. And I know a lot of people are concerned about piracy in Russia. I just can say, if you take the market seriously, if you have day one Russian translation, they really appreciate it. I think it's one of the greatest markets out there. They buy the stuff. They do anything for you. They're super vocal on the forums. Make sure you get your Russian fans on board, and which is why we have our Kickstarter campaign translated in Russian.
Yeah, so that definitely makes sense. So hint to all other developers that may listen. Russian on day one.
Yeah.
What about in the Europe market? Is Germany pretty much the big consumer in games? Because I know like board games and stuff, you guys seem to be.
Yeah, board games, it's adventure games. So Tim Schafer had a nice plug in his Kickstarter campaign. So adventure games are dying out, just not in Germany. And so that is true to a certain extent, but it's also shooters, racing games and such. So Germany is the biggest market in Europe. But UK is pretty close to that. It used to be the other way around, but now Germany is the largest market. Sadly, there are not too many great games coming out of Germany. So it's a combination of the German developers tend to make games that are very deep in terms of strategy and so on, and not too many action games. Few exceptions would be, obviously, Crytek, and then don't know if you came across Lords of the Fallen from Deck 13.
Yeah.
They just won best studio in Germany, well-deserved. Great, fantastic title, great team, very, very nice guys. Oh, they've been around for 15 years or so. So if you haven't seen that, definitely worth checking out. And then, obviously, Germany is the German studios are good at free-to-play, coming from browser games, because there was it was kind of underserved. So when it took off, because we had a good internet infrastructure and database programming skills here, so free-to-play took off. So this is why Big Point, InnoGames, Good Games, GameForge in the very beginning. So they're all huge. They're all a couple hundred people. So, and I know Good Games is or wants to become a studio of 1,200 people. So that's massive. And now they're pretty successful on mobile too. So they're doing pretty well. So, but yeah, it's a different kind of game.
Yeah, because the first time that I remember encountering just the German gaming community was with the Das Schwarze Auge,
Das Schwarze Auge.
Yeah, I'm close. Mispronounced. Close. Yeah. So over here it was called Realms of Arcania. So we had Realms of Arcania, Star Trail, and it was just like, wow, these guys make a better Dungeons and Dragons than we do. Okay, you know.
What did you say?
Yeah, but it was the one thing that I had. Noted from that though is those games were just brutally hard. You know, they didn't take it easy on you at all. So there seems to be a better appreciation of difficulty
and we love simulations. The Germans love simulation games. So we have
that's what someone just said in the Twitch chat.
So in Germany there's I forgot the name. You can have your machines that you use on the field, like if you get up the potatoes and stuff. So you can what's the name of it? I forgot that. Like this machinery in farming, agriculture.
Farming machinery. Yeah.
So some hardcore farming, right?
What?
So you're
driving these huge machines and get that, and it's super successful.
Have you seen okay, so we have accessories, right? Like you know, if you want to play a racing game, you get a nice race wheel with force feedback and whatever. So then I saw where Mad Catz is making a farming controller. for if that actually screws down onto your desk, and it's the little joystick and the buttons from a combine. And I was just like, wow, okay, this is a lot more popular than I thought that it was, because
yeah, let me put that in the thing for you, because that's that's amazing that they're making that. So
I can just see, you know, somebody with an Oculus Rift on and a farm joystick on their desk.
Let me tell you something though about Farming Simulator though. Like, that game is relaxing.
I'm sure it is. I am sure it is.
Farming Simulator. That it is. Yeah.
I keep waiting on them to put in like a zombie cow mod, and then because you know, you have to
combine over the cows. Right?
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Let's do one more because I got to wrap up and go to work. So do one more. You were going to do a question. So do your one more question. And then
I didn't have anything really exciting.
Oh, I was just... okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. We should wrap it up because I do have to go to work.
Yeah, it's only one hour and 40 minutes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So the German developers, are you guys pretty tight? Do you know each other pretty well? Or are you just spread out and kind of isolated? Okay.
No, the scene is not too large. There's one conference, Quo Vadis, that's in Berlin, and about 4,000 people are attending. But the last 2 years, every talk was in English. That helped tremendously to get international speakers, of course, but also to get this conference on the radar.
Mm.
So in case you want to come to Berlin in April, the weather starts to be nice. That is definitely something worth checking out. Really great talks. People like Ed Fries are coming, and really some top tier speakers. And it's about everything. It's about console, PC, free to play, whatever. And
we'll see if it was the 90s. I could get a press junket to come over.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
It doesn't happen anymore. But. Yeah, so that's kind of neat because, you know, we talked to David Morenz, who's doing Starship Corporation. We got just various German developers that have come on. So I just didn't know, you know, if you guys all hung out together or what, because it's, you know, it's not a big country, but it's not real small either. No. So, you know, it's a lot more local than here because we got, you know, 3,000 miles coast to coast. So Brian and I are that far apart.
You guys are huge. I can tell every time I come over.
Yeah, it's a pretty massive place.
So I have a quick question.
Sure.
Sorry, just a quick question. So was this your first Gamescom that you went to personally?
No. I've been to Gamescom till it exists. So I think it's the sixth year. Prior to then, we went to Leipzig, which was the Games convention. So the first time was like 2005. It was like for 3 years in Leipzig, and then it was Gamescom.
Nice. Oh. I would love to go to Gamescom because it's huge. Like, I've seen videos, like, massive.
It's crazy, but you're going to love it.
Yeah, we've been to E3, and it's just like, we look at Gamescom, and it's like, that's far more attractive. You know, it just seems like a saner event. So
it seems more games-focused than...
It is. It's a different show, so it's kind of unfair, I'd say, to compare them. So E3 is more about business, and you see more business people there. It's still huge, and you do have some consumers.
Sure.
And at Gamescom, you have kind of both. You have something like E3 that's a little bit more locked down, so that you won't have the consumers running around. And then there are these massive consumer halls with the big booths of the EAs, Activisions, whatnot, and Xbox and Sony, and it's crazy. And something I haven't seen at E3 is like this whole cosplay scene seems to go to Gamescom. So I'd say 10% at least, maybe 20%. They are dressed up as their favorite characters, and they go crazy with their stuff. And it's so great to see like those characters from all those games as cosplay characters running around. It's fantastic because it shows the affection of the fans to the to games, to their passion. So
yeah, I've started wondering about the cosplay thing. If some of the characters in the games are just the developers daring somebody to dress up like that. So.
Oh no, you see them, you see them, and you can tell that is not a developer. That those are fans.
No, but I'm saying maybe they put a character in there that's, you know, like Mad Moxie in Borderlands. It's like, well, she's just there because we knew Jessica Negri was going to dress up like that. So.
Possibly, but you see anything. Literally, people came as zombies, Assassin's Creed, from Nintendo titles, somebody came as a mushroom, and you're like, what? it's fantastic to see that. It's like Carnival. You know what Carnival is?
Yeah, in Brazil, yeah.
But we have it in Germany in a crazy style. So everybody dresses up stupidly and or fun, and so that's pretty much mixed with games, and you see that. It's fantastic to see.
Great. All right, so last question. When do you think this might come out, Everspace? When
October 2016. That's you need to be precise. If you're on Kickstarter, you need to give the month. No new quarter, not just a year. You have to say the months.
That seems reasonable. It's about 2 years. So that seems a way off. And it sounds like early.
No, it's just a year. A year and a couple months.
Yeah. October, well, but you started working on it earlier this year is what I'm saying. So that's about two years. Of development, so that's pretty great because I'm really excited to play this. I want to play it right now, but I'll wait.
Yeah, well, I hate it when people. Okay, case in point is when CD Projekt Red announced the whole Cyberpunk 2020 thing, which I've been a fan of the Cyberpunk 2020 stuff since the 90s, right? So it's like, oh god, they're gonna make that, great, and then it's like, oh yeah, well, one of these years. We'll get around to it. And it's like, oh God, why did you even tease me with it? I would have preferred to not even know. So,
yeah.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us in the midst of your Kickstarter campaign and making the game. You must be super busy, but I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. It has been a pleasure. And I think I can speak for all of us when I say we are super excited to actually play this thing.
Oh, yes. This is so great to hear. And, well, thank you guys for 1 hour 45 podcast. That's my longest interview ever.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure. We love getting into the nitty gritty. We don't mind talking for a while. So we love it. So thank you so much for being willing to talk that long.
Yeah, honestly, if we could just have everybody over for dinner, we would do that.
Oh, like, God, for hours. Okay. For hours. Just have a huge dinner party. Just talk for hours to everyone. As much food as you want. We make it a buffet.
Be careful what you wish for. I might come.
Oh, well, we would invite you. We'd make a big American buffet with lots of fatty food. Yeah, that's how we would.
Which coast you're coming to, and one of us will get a plane ticket.
Yeah, probably the East Coast since I'm outvoted.
Yeah, well, we're looking. Oh, yeah, because Hunter's here. All right, well, that's it. North Carolina by default, always.
Yeah.
But yeah, because it's
Space Game, majority rule.
Yeah. Space Game Junkie Con, North Carolina, 2017.
Yeah, because
confirmed. You heard it first.
Well, Hunter's from up in Ohio where I grew up, and then I'm about 600 miles south of that now, and then so he just moved down here. So he's not too far, a couple hours away from me.
I guess I'll come to GDC, right?
Yeah. Well, what was neat, Brian and I have done this for years, and we've known each other since, God, what, the 90s? And had never actually met. And then he had a Matrix Games thing where they were doing a show up toward Washington, D.C., which is about 3 hours north of me in Virginia. And it was just like, well, you're going to be there. So we drove up. It was my wife and I drove up to meet Brian. Yeah, that was a good time. I wish I could have spent another. I should have. In hindsight, I should have taken.
Should have taken that next day off. Because that convention we went to was just fun.
Yeah, I would have.
It was fun watching people play this crazy ass board game shit.
Yeah, well, and that's another thing. Speaking of Germany and such, right? Because you guys are really into the board game scene there, right? And what about like tabletop miniatures and like the historical?
Oh, that's big over here.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's we still love that. People meet up and to do the classic board games and tabletop. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Big scene.
God, I love that stuff.
Yeah, I wish we had more of it here. It's
it's pretty big. I mean, you see these Kickstarters for board games just going off the chain.
Oh, I know, so but it's like I own a bunch of board games. I don't have anybody to play with because they live far away.
That's because it's so spread out.
That's the thing. Is like we need a smaller country.
Like when I used to live back east, it was much easier to find people to do pen and paper role playing stuff with. But out here, it's like nigh impossible, you know, because it's so spread out in Los Angeles. Yeah. So it's
next year, Gamescom, you come over and then.
I would love to come to Gamescom. I should save up for that. I would love to come to. I've been, you know, I see the shit coming out of Gamescom. I've been watching it for years. It's like I want to go to that. Yeah, I'd love to go to Germany too. So.
Yeah, I'm afraid if I leave the country, they won't let me back in.
What did you do? All right. All right. Well, folks, thank you so much for watching and listening, and we'll see you next week. Michael, thank you so much again for joining us. We are out. Thank you so much again, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
And we're out.
All right.
Oh, my God. Good show, everyone. Good. That was great.
Thank you.
That was a lot of fun. Michael, that was great. You just kept on going. That was so much fun. I shouldn't have clapped. Yeah. I might have just woken up my girlfriend.
Well, you know, a lot of times it's like we'll have somebody on and then it's kind of like we talk for 15, 20 minutes or something. And then it's like, okay, well, that's everything about the game. Now what? But, you know,
you guys have such a history.
Well, that's the thing is I enjoy it when we get somebody on that's not nervous about being here and whatever. Because, you know, I think it's funny, like, so people come on and they're like, oh, God, you know, I'm nervous. I'm on, you know, the show.
I'm fucking nervous.
It's just like, wow, no, you know.
Don't be nervous with us.
Yeah, it's just like this is the most unprofessional thing you've...
We're a niche podcast within a niche site. I mean, you know, we get visitors, we get viewers and listeners, but I mean, we're not like fucking Serial or This American Life. So relax.
I'll cool. I spread the word. You can bet. So I will drive as many as possible to this 150 thing. Yeah,
I appreciate it. This should go up probably with Jim. When can you have this up? Because we can probably put it up
right now.
Yeah, do it right now. We can have this up probably later today or tomorrow.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, we'll do the Kickstarter stuff because it's
awesome.
Sensitive.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely have links to Kickstarter and everything. I will let you know when it goes live, and hopefully that'll get you. Because I mean, you guys are just chugging along, but hopefully that'll get you at least a few more donations, at least. Because you guys are like spitting distance of $100,000.
Are we? Okay, I haven't checked in the meantime. Okay.
Yeah, you're 95,965 right now.
Oh wow. What's the goal?
Oh, nice.
24,000. Well, in American dollars, it's $244,285. I'm not sure what that is in euros.
225. We were shooting for the 250.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. So that's why.
So, there's a little nice little thing you can hover over.
Yeah,
and
it's connected to the German bank account. That's why it's in euros.
Oh, so right now you are at 88,000 euros, which is still, you're well over a third of the way there. Which is nothing to sneeze at.
How many days into it?
We still have 30.
Yeah, you have 30 days left. Yeah, you guys are.
Yeah.
I think you guys are well on the way, and you guys got greenlit so quickly. There is an audience here, so.
Yeah. It's like really the only thing you could do to make the game better is if you put like dinosaurs and zombies in it.
Please.
So, dinosaur spaceships you can ride and start everyone naked. Start everyone naked and make dinosaur spaceships you can ride outside of.
Dude, dinosaur space. Oh, God, that sounds awesome. Dude,
why has no one done that? Why has no one made dinosaur spaceships?
That's the thing in ARK, right? Hunter and I have been playing this game Ark. I'm running a server, right? I'm sure you're aware of it. It's selling so much you can't not. But it's you know, you get in there and you start out with nothing because there's this rise of the whole crafting and survival game kind of thing because it's an offshoot of Minecraft, right? But now it's like much more refined. So you're in this Ark game and you can it's almost like an MMO except it's limited to 70 players. Or whatever. So, but you go in there and you can do player versus enemy, you know, where you're just fighting the dinosaurs and the animals and stuff, which is enough. I mean, God, we get killed every day. But then if you join a server that's actually adversarial, then you have different tribes of humans and, you know, you kind of choose your allegiance and then go kill the other humans and you can tame the dinosaurs. and ride around and stuff.
Yeah, but there's but the thing is though is there's not just like the dinosaurs on the ground. There's like pterodactyls you can tame and then like get a saddle and fly around, or there's like dolphins you can get a saddle and like go swimming under the ocean.
Yeah, did you see the guy tame the megalodon? He's riding like a giant shark, and it was like
okay,
super exploration-y, but like also there's PvE and PvP. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, so so it kind of suits everybody is the thing about it. Like if you can if you're into like a first person perspective of a crafting game, a survival game, you know, if you like dinosaurs, whatever. The thing that they don't have in there is spaceships.
Spaceships.
So,
yeah,
but if I could just I want to be able to craft like a helmet for my T-Rex that has lasers on it, and then I could do like a walker from Star Wars. But then you know in the space community, of course, now we have like space engineers, which unfortunately they've kind of moved on to something else. That's a huge irritation, right? Is whenever these people start these projects. And, you know, it'll be on Kickstarter, and it's like, yeah, we're going to make this thing. And then they get about halfway done with it, and then some new project becomes more.
Yeah, the updates for it have slowed down, and they've handed it over to the community and given their code over to the community to take care of.
Yeah, which is better than nothing. But then again, like, that's what Tim Schafer did with DF9, right? Because the way that their funding worked is they said, okay, we're going to do this early access thing. But they were actually – it was almost like a Ponzi scheme where it's like, well, we have to keep early access money coming in because we didn't pool up money. We're actually like living hand to mouth. You know, it's like every time a sale comes in, then we use that to write your paycheck. So as soon as everybody that wanted the game had the game on pre-order, they said, well, we're not selling pre-orders anymore. We can't afford to continue to develop it. And it's like, oh, no, you did it wrong. Yeah, so – yeah, it's that's a thing just in the whole Kickstarter and crowdfunding deal, and it's I see we kind of look at Chris Roberts with a bit of a stare now, and it's like, okay, you've got, what's he up to, like 80 something million? Did he get to 90 yet?
Yeah, close to 90.
Yeah. So he's got all that money, but he's, you know, at first a lot of people were like, well, I don't know, and then as time goes on and they haven't really delivered anything. And then we see people kind of exiting from the business, and it's like, okay, so what's really going to happen here? Right. And I think that is such a big project that's going to kind of destabilize the whole crowdfunding, the consumer faith in that business model, maybe.
Well, I think there's an issue there too, because they, like, at Gamescom, they just like showed off a brand new.
Hey guys, I'm sorry, I'm gonna go. So here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna leave the Skype call on. You guys can keep talking, and I'm just gonna bail. So keep on talking. I'm muting my microphone and everything. So thank you so much. Thank you so much, everyone. That was a great show, and I'll see you later.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
Have fun at work.
Thanks.
Yeah, because at Gamescom, what was it? They just announced that there's going to be, like, you can finally start doing the multi-crewed ships.
Right.
Like, that's a thing that they finally just announced. But
is it going to be multi-crewed in that arena thing that's no fun anyway?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, is that enough to continue, like, yeah, I don't know.
To be honest, we haven't followed them closely. I think the issue is with Star Citizen, they have so much they can do, and that takes time. But they're also working with studios, scattered across the globe. Right. I think that's a challenge too. Actually, we don't want to be in their position, have that much money, and that it feels like an obligation. So we'd rather have a small game, have the focus, the vision, and that's it.
Right,
so.
Because, well, feature creep, even in a small game, will get you in trouble. Yeah. But when you have darn near unlimited funding and then the expectations that come with it, it's like, well, where do you say, okay, we're feature complete, this is it, and now we're going to actually build those features?
You know what? Coming up with Roguelike, there was the major reason was a limitation in budget. So we said we cannot make a full campaign and persistent universe and all that stuff, A, because we don't have the budget, B, that already exists with Elite and Star Citizen, so we need to have something else. And then our fanboys of Roguelike said, well, that's why we do Roguelike. And then it's not too expensive, but we add the nice graphics to it.
Yeah.
Well, it was a necessity in the beginning, and then it became clear to us, no, it's actually a great concept. It's something new. It's fresh.
Mm.
Okay.
Well,
done.
I like procedurally generated things because every time mm-hmm. I play it, I'm going to have a slightly different experience, right? And I like things that have a little bit of a narrative to it. Like one of my favorite games is Mass Effect 2, because even though Hunter and I played the same game, we can say, well, what happened in your game? And I have a completely different story of what, because of the choices that I made, right? So that sort of thing, even in the amount of content and the amount of narrative that they had there, it dictated that it had to be, you know, it had to be like solid written chunks, but the order that you get those in and whether you see it or not depends on what you do. But in a roguelike thing where it's completely procedural, and I would say the ultimate in that, hopefully, a game that I really want it to be what they promise, but I don't really know how they're going to do that and actually keep it fun, is that No Man's Sky. It looks like an awesome concept, but it's kind of like with my experience in Elite, right, with Elite Dangerous, they have generated so much content there as far as the map. You know, there's billions of star systems and each has planets and stuff, but you get to those planets and what is there to do? And, and that's my problem is even though there's an infinite amount of game there, there's really nothing to do in it. And I've hit the point where the game doesn't, there's no risk and reward dynamic because nothing in that game can kill me now. And I don't have the biggest ship in the game. I've only got, you know, you can get ships that are 100 million credits. I've only got a 4 million credit ship, and there's no challenge anymore. But if I go back to his original game, Elite, that thing is just unapologetic about killing me. And it's fun because, much like a roguelike, if I'm surviving moment to moment, that's the reward. You know, I know that I'm achieving something. Whereas in Elite Dangerous as it stands, I don't get a sense of achievement because it's just, it's a simulator where, yes, things shoot at me, but, you know, it's like I could carry on a text conversation while I'm fighting and it's still no challenge, right? So, yeah, I don't know. And for them to come out at GamesCon and say, oh, well, now we're going to add this planetary landing thing and we're going to do all this other, I just see, like, well, the focus...
No Man's Sky has that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, not only that, and they're going to do it better, right? So why try? But it's the thing of, why are you taking the focus away from the game that I wanted and you haven't really finished yet? Because you haven't put the stuff there that actually makes it a game to me. Right, it's like the framework is there. Now you need to populate it with an actual reason to play it. But now you're going to take the focus away from that and go to this planetary landing thing, and still leave, you know, the place in between the planets is empty. But then they said, well, the planets are going to just be, you know, no atmosphere, no life. Okay, so I can drive a little buggy around on the moon. What am I going to do there? So that just looks like more empty content to me. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, it's I so desperately want to love that game, but it just doesn't give me anything back. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. And it's like, at least that game's in my hands, though, unlike Star Citizen that just doesn't exist yet. So.
Well, we see if they release next year. So that's the latest rumors, isn't it?
Oh, what, with Star Citizen?
I thought they're going to come out next year, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know. I've honestly quit looking because it's frustrating.
Okay.
Because what happened, they ended up actually, Chris was the fourth guest that we had, or he was actually the second guest, but our fourth show. And and it was neat to get him on because he had just, you know, they were still in the Kickstarter whenever we got him on, and he was like full of, you know, the ideas and stuff, but he hadn't really talked to a lot of people about it, and just getting to talk to him about, well, you know, what are you thinking this is going to do, and where he was talking back then, it sounded almost like EVE Online, except you actually pilot the ships, And it's like, okay, that's what I wanted out of EVE Online, is I wanted to more fly the ship than, you know, just click on menus. So yeah, that's great. That's what I want to do. And it's like the scope of it, as he has collected more funding, the scope of that has gotten so far blown out that now it's like, oh, well, now we're going to have a first-person shooter in here. And we're going to have, you know, and it's just like, well, how many different games are going to be under this one umbrella?
Yeah.
You know?
There you go. And then this is what we want. We want to make sure that Everspace, we're not a sim. It's a space shooter. It's an action game. That's our core focus, mm-hmm. right? And if people want to have more, then we take it from there, and that might be a different game. But Everspace is a space shooter. It's right. not a sim,
yeah,
right?
If you do one thing, yeah. do it really well. And then you exactly. want to add things onto it afterwards, fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But make sure yeah. you do the one thing that you're supposed to do. Yeah, so, I mean, that's just kind of my frustration with the market right now. And yeah. Yeah. But I see that whenever Star Citizen came about and they were so successful in the funding, I think that got a lot of people interested in the genre again, because they said, oh, well, wait, there is a lot of money here. There's people willing to pay for even an intangible promise that this could exist again. So,
which yeah. I seriously hope they don't screw it up.
Yeah.
But we will see. We will see.
Yeah. But it,
guys,
it's just...
I'm afraid I need to run sooner or later. Okay. I see comments coming up on Kickstarter and Steam. And I mean, it's fantastic that we have had such a long time chatting with each other. The team is looking at me because they have some burning questions as well.
Okay.
FAQ was burning. And I mean, but definitely, if you're a GDC, it would be awesome to meet face to face and then, to see each other.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, or maybe right maybe, on, maybe we have another one when we have a major milestone achieved, something new or so, and we can do this again.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, it's we, awesome. I mean, definitely. We love to have people back, for sure.
Okay, cool.
You know, and it's like probably the best timing for that would be, you know, when you have like a playable build that you could give us,
right.
and we could mess around with it and give some perceptions and that. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Let's do that. That probably won't be during the Kickstarter campaign. Because we want to make sure that the core loop, at least that exists. So mm-hmm. with the dying, getting back, the upgrading, so far we have pieces, but it's not in a, how to say, in a complete loop.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, October-ish, November-ish, something like there.
Yeah. I think the timing of that would be good. Cool.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah. It's, you Perfect. Know, and it's like, we're like Brian was saying, you know, it's like, we're not in a hurry to get a hold of it. You know, it's more like we want to actually, you know, show people like that, you know, this is the whole thing kind of deal, or at least give an accurate impression of that. So it's better to wait, you know, if we can. So.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
Then let's do that. Ping me when the podcast is live, and then I will shoot on all channels.
Okay.
Get some traffic on it.
All right, yeah? Excellent. Yeah, I'll work on that right now, and then he's headed to work, but he can send it up from there. So,
okay. Awesome.
All right,
awesome.
Thanks.
All right, you guys.
See you later.
All right.
Well, then, thanks again. Have a good one. Bye-bye.